I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith. Join me, my co-host, Raul and Shu. Happy to welcome back to the pod, friend of the pod, Brian Geisinger from 247 Sports, BuzzBeat Podcast. So obviously we're here to preview Houston a little bit to get into this matchup. Sweet 16 down in Dallas here, one versus the four. Houston number two on KenPom right now, but they've really just been in a dominant statistical like position here for like 4 or 5 months. So we figured we would kind of talk about the offense, talk about the defense, some keys to the game here. I'm not going to go through the roster per se. They got a lot of scary guys out there on the wing, the backcourt. I mean, basically they're starting, like, it just seems like 5'6" guys out there. And I know LJ's a little bit smaller, so is she, but the way their length and just the way they play, it just seems like they have five wings at all times. But first, let's talk about their offense. I think the defense is the big talking point, but let's just start with the offense here. 14th on KenPom. So, you know, not incredible, but obviously that's pretty elite, right? You're top 15 in the country. You're doing something right here. Brian, as we jump into their offense, what have you seen in terms of like how Duke might go about trying to contain those guards with Sharp, who's just a sharp shooter, right? You got Cryer up there, you got Jamal Sheed. How do you slow those guys down, or can you, besides just not turning the ball over?
Yeah, that's a big deal. And obviously, like, taking care of the defensive glass is a big deal against Houston. Yeah. It's very good. Second offense team, despite the fact that they're not, as you were sort of saying, like, they're not overly big. It's a lot of guys that are in the same, you know, all the front court guys are like basically the same size. Everyone's like really muscular and really strong and really aggressive. And they're totally like bought in on the defensive side of the floor. And I think sort of to the way you like started it, like, they've been so good defensively, it does sort of like cover up for an offense that's actually been quite good this season too. I think Jamal Shedd is like, I mean, he's one of the best guards in the country easily. And it feels like he's been around for a long time now. Mm-hmm. He really has. And it's sort of an obvious starting point, but I think it does start with him. Like, if you're thinking of, when I close my eyes and think Houston's offense, it goes in a few different directions, but it's like spread pick and roll with Shedd and Francis or Roberts. It's drag pick and roll, like early ball screen action with Shedd. It's like pistol 21 action on the side with like, they get to the guard to guard. That was like the year they went to the, did they go to the Final Four or the title game in 2021? But whatever that year was, like all of the, like the guard to guard screening actions they had, they've got the movement sets for LJ Cryer. It gives them a guy that, you know, they kind of use him in ways that Duke will use McCain, right? You're getting him off of pin downs and, he, you know, getting him off of Iverson screens, and he can look for a shot or he can flow into side pick and roll. And there's some other components of it too, just for like from the post out that we can maybe even get into a little bit as well. But as far as like where it starts, I think it's like Shed, pick and roll. Like, can you keep him out of the paint? Can you force him to take those floaters? Can you make the passes challenging, the playmaking opportunities challenging? Because like, it's not a heliocentric offense, but he is the main guy. I mean, 26% usage rate, 40% assist rate. I think this team has like great passing synergy together, and they get dirty points on the offensive glass. But like, for me, it just starts with him, you know, being able to like try to limit his playmaking opportunities and seeing if you can force him into some, you know, some long twos and stuff like that. I think there are ways Duke can get to that. And, but it's going to be tough against Houston.
Do you think that's a Proctor matchup there, or do you like Proctor kind of doing his like just really trying to shut down one of the guys off ball, or do you try to throw a little bit of size at him and say, hey, we got a 6'5" guard here that maybe could take away some vision? Obviously, we're probably not going to hope that McCain's in that matchup too often. Maybe you see some Jeremy Roach there. They're kind of the same size height wise. Obviously, kind of the bulk is not quite there. Mm-hmm. Who do you see that might be best suited to kind of point of attack?
Yeah, it's tough. Because I think Proctor is really good chasing guys off screens and stuff. Yeah. And so, you know, Cryer could make some sense too. But I could see that also being like a Roach or McCain matchup. And you just say, look, Proctor's their best, you know, guard defender. So just roll with it. If he's your best guard defender and he's got like somewhat of a length, you know, like height advantage on Shed, just go with him there, right? And try to have it be like as stout at the point of attack as possible. I guess like with Roach, you got like a little bit more, you know, foot speed if you want to get to that. But my guess would be they start with Proctor, and you know, I think along with that, they'll probably start with Proctor. I'm guessing they'll continue to switch 1 through 4. And so like Mitchell will end up on him a lot when like Roberts screens for Shed, when they get to some of their like 1-4 screens. And I would bet my assumption is that Duke will start in the drop, that like Filipowski will be in drop coverage to start. And you're going to try to see if you can, and it's not going to be easy, but see if you can push Shed into taking some tough twos. And also, I think you want to be mindful of like not being totally switched out on against a team that's a very good offensive rebounding squad. Like with Houston, mm-hmm. It's something you probably got to be like a little mindful of. So that would be my guess, but I'm sure you're going to see a lot of switching from Duke in this game. So like guys are just going to end up, Proctor's going to end up on all of these guys, right? Mm-hmm. At points in the game. And like, it's just going to be up to those guys to like defend hard and not get in foul trouble too. Like it's a tough task, and it's going to mean like navigating screens, battling, and then also at times switching on the larger, you know, front court players than having to battle on the glass and battle in the post, because they'll throw it into the post. So it's not going to be easy. But
they hunt mismatches in that way. Like, because most of the stuff that I've looked at has obviously been their defense, right? And just mm-hmm. trying to figure out, God, how do you avoid this blitz? Like, what do you do about it? But in terms of their offense, it really looks like they rely on Sheet to just create everything, right? Like his assist rate is like astronomical, but no one else's is even in the same stratosphere as his. So is this like, maybe I could go back and watch some of the Iowa State stuff, but then again, that's just the number one defense. So it's kind of hard to pick that apart. But is it like, if you can take him out and make these other guys ball handlers, are they going to just try to pick mismatches and say, okay, whoever gets Jared, we're going to attack that? Or is it just going to be him trying to facilitate here?
I think there's some of that. I think a guy like Roberts too is going to initiate from the front court, right? They're going to get to some like, you know, 5-out looking type sets where he's doing dribble handoffs stuff. They've got some inverted ball screens where Shed is screening for him. And they can also throw it to him in the post. And like, he can play bully ball and he can pass a little bit too. And, you know, they've got some other good like front court finishers that can do that as well. I suppose there's a chance that like Duke could say, like, we're just going to try to get the ball out of Shed's hands, like we'll blitz, you know, we're going to put two on the ball. and then just try to like play 3-on-4 on the back side. I guess there's a case to be made for that. I think it does leave you like a little exposed, and you're already in rotation against a team that like Houston's not like a great assist rate team, but if you watch enough of their film offensively, like they're connected. I think they're passing, like the flashes are pretty good. So, I mean, I do think they want to play like smash mouth offense. And so at times that's going to lend itself to picking at mismatches. Roberts, you know, 6'7", 230. I think Mitchell can match up nicely with him, but if he gets a switch, you know, with one of the guards, I could see him looking to just try to like go at that and use his size and strength. And if, you know, if Shed gets, you know, Mitchell or Flips or Sean Stewart switched out on him, like he'll probably try to, you know, pick at that too. So they're tough because they're versatile. But really, like, as far as like the on-ball pick and roll creation goes, like there really is like one guy. Cause even like right. the stuff with Cryer is like, you know, he comes across two Iverson screens, then it's an empty corner ball screen, right? And like that's great action. That's great to get like, you know, little empty corner side ball screen, especially when he gets it set up on the left side of the floor so he can dribble right to the middle to his dominant hand. But I think of him as more like, you know, he's more of like a, you know, catch and shoot shooter that also has the ability to sort of like put on the deck, not like a primary playmaker type, you know?
Sure, sure. Shoot, were you going to say something? I saw you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, just earlier, just to jump in, like we were talking about kind of containing Shed. I know that, you know, and I haven't watched a lot of Houston, but just kind of doing some sleuthing, been on Cougars boards, you know, reading stuff. They're kind of prone to some offensive droughts from time to time, at least, you know, reading their own fans. I know just, you know, last game, Texas A&M, they're up 10 with a minute and a half. You know, I know it's not a big drought, but they let these guys back in the game, you know, force it overtime.
And their shooting numbers support that, really, right? Like when I'm looking at a top 14 offense, like it's hard. Like obviously I haven't watched them a ton, but it really seems like, okay, if they're not letting them get live ball turnovers and you're at least remotely competitive on the defensive glass, like they're shooting 35% as a team from three, which is good, but not like crazy. They're shooting under 50% from two, which is kind of bottom half there. They're not a great free throw shooting team. They're under 70%. So it looks like, okay, where's this offense coming from? And it would seem to be, I guess, just live ball turnovers, offensive rebounds and putbacks, and just using that kind of like energy and athleticism to just pressure you in that way. Is that like accurate? Would you kind of?
Yeah, I think it's like there's like a numbers. They can win the numbers in possession game because they're a low turnover offense, right? In part because like the ball's in the hands of one guy primarily, you know, a veteran, very good point guard. I mean, you know, Shed is essentially like an NBA player. Like, you know, they basically got like a backup NBA point guard out there like running their offense. Right. And then they get extra possessions on the offensive glass. So just I think for them it's just become sort of like a numbers volume thing, where they pass the ball pretty well. They've got sets to get into. They've got like different offenses to work through. Even if it is sort of like one guy is like the primary ball handler, there are different things again that can go through Roberts in the post or, you know, like five out handoff stuff. They've got the movement sets with Sharp and Cryer especially. So they can like diversify a little bit when they need to. But yeah, I do think there's like a brutalism to their game on both, like on both sides of the floor.
Our offense is going to have to help our defense, right? Like we can't take bad shots and you just can't live ball turn it over to let them score in transition.
Make them take the ball out of the net, right? Yeah. Like make Houston, like, yeah, this is a game that like, and that's hard against Houston. This is, arguably the best defense in the country by the numbers. They're, you know, one or two basically. But yes, that's a great point. Like don't make, you know, keep your turnover rate down too, which again is hard against Houston. Like it is nuts to see like, how much like they are as good at forcing turnovers as they are at like avoiding them offensively. They just, they win on them. They kill you on the margin there. You know,
one thing that's interesting to me is they must not be pushing a lot off of those turnovers they force, because their pace is down near the bottom of D1, and you would expect a team that's third in forcing turnovers to have a higher pace.
Yeah.
That so is it seems like they're forcing turnovers, but in order to get into a more methodical set.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like they do defensively, they grind you too, which is like, you know, it's no real surprise that like they have like these sort of like longer possessions, because like their turnovers are coming when you're trying to make like the second or third pass, kind of, you know, like working it around these pick and roll blitz coverages that they're throwing at you. But like they're a machine defensively, and I mean, I'm sure we'll get into that, because it's like it's a lot to deal with. Though I think Duke has some tools for solving it. I think defensively, like, it's tough because Phillip's going to be asked to do so much offensively in this game, but he's going to have to anchor it. Like, he's going to have to just like, he's going to have to be, I mean, it's a collective thing to sort of like own the defensive glass, but like, he's got to have a big game on the glass. He's going to have to do a bunch of different stuff, guarding pick and roll. Like, he's going to have to handle all of that. And I think Mitchell therefore takes on like a very large, like secondary role, because they need his secondary rim protection. They need his rebounding. They need his versatility, because he's going to end up guarding basically like four or five guys throughout the course of this game. And just those dudes are going to have, and like they're capable of doing it. Like Filipowski and Mitchell are awesome. those guys are super good. So, but they're going to need a hell of a game from those two guys, like on the glass, at the rim, and like handling different pick and roll schemes.
Maybe even a guy like Sean Stewart, who hasn't really played a ton of minutes, but if you look at his like rebounding percentages offensively and defensively, they lead our team, right? So maybe if he can just sell out for that, like
in like in terms of motor and athleticism, he's theoretically like built for a game like this. It's just
especially if they're
like
trapping and blitzing and doubling. Yeah. It's like if you can catch a few backline lobs or something. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like their forwards like, they're not looking to score a lot. Like, they're not just dumping it into the post, you know, mm-hmm. against Stewart and trying to go, you know, one-on-one over him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it does seem like it's I mean, I don't know about Ryan Young, you know, like he traditionally has been a guy who could put some kind of glass numbers and body guys, but that's been a bit inconsistent this year.
Hey,
but
hey, if you look at the stats from the scrimmage last year, he was our leading scorer versus Houston.
He was.
Completely different team, so. But he was the leading scorer versus Houston.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying that because we're going to have to protect Flip and fouls. And like, I don't think Houston is a team that shoots a ton of free throws, it looks like. They give up a ton. Like, I think A&M just shot 45 of them.
But they only made 29.
And that's a weird thing too, right? How good they're, like, even their free throw defense, which is like not a thing, is awesome, right? So it's like it's even when they foul teams a lot, like teams are shooting 67% from them, which obviously they don't control that.
So exhausted from like having to go against their defense that when they get to the line, they're just coming up short or something.
Yeah.
That's the one part of their like defensive fundamentals in terms of the numbers that feels like a little fluky, you know? But everything else just like lights up red as like this is like a dominant defense.
But they get like steals and they block the hell out of shots.
Yeah,
too, right? Like you said,
there's no defense like this in the ACC. You know, right. Like there's just nothing. There's no one who guards pick and roll quite like this. There's like elements of like UVA and like element, but like with like FSU aggression. You know what I mean? Like it's just that kind of like, because you know, UVA is going to hedge ball screens. Houston's blitzing or trapping, like how, you know, however they label it.
And Samson doesn't like it called a trap. I saw that. Yeah. He does not want it to be, it looks like a trap, but he apparently says that it's not a trap.
And you can see all the guard defenders, like Shed and especially, like do the little like jump up and try to like put two hands to try to like block passes. And like that's a part of like, it's their scheme is pretty sophisticated, honestly. Like obviously there's like a just like raw strength power element to it, but to execute it this well, you've got to communicate, you've got to be like rotating, you got to be synchronized, like the off-ball guys on the backside have to be ready to roll, especially because like the thing that always jumps out to me most watching their defense is like when they're guarding pick and roll and it ends up being a pop, not a roll, so you've got, they put two on the ball with the trap. The guy who set the screen is technically like is for a half second open on the pop, but they send one of those three backline help defenders up. Like it's not like a stunt. Like it's a full like close out, you know, on that. And like they're making the rotations behind the ball starting with that are really good. And But those are also opportunities for Filipowski.
Yep.
Like that, that's in like it. I feel like whenever I like talk about like Duke game plan stuff, like sometimes I almost feel like bad because I put so much on Flip's plate, right? And I'm like, but he's just such a talented player with that size, and like he's such a matchup problem and like a problem solver. And in this case, just like having a front court guy that can make quick decisions, that can map the floor, that can shoot, you know, hopefully, you know, he's streaky, obviously, but if he has the pop three going, that's a game changer. Who could also put the ball on the deck too? Like, there are ways you could see him like doing damage against this defense, but like, it's not going to be easy. And he also needs to be on the floor. So it's like,
yeah,
making sure he's like non-foul trouble, making sure he's locked in. But he is like every time Duke plays a team that has, whether it's like UNC in drop coverage or it's Virginia in the hedge, like my eyes just immediately first go to Flip. And that's the same case here, because like he's the one setting most of the screens. So what is he doing after setting the screen? And like, I think really that's like where, and there's other stuff that Duke can do. But like for me, for the most part, like that's where it starts with them offensively, at least.
It seems to me like Flip has to make himself a big target in the middle there. And then he has to kind of get rolling downhill. And then at that point, we're going 3-on-2. Mm-hmm. And he's got shooters in the corner to spray out to. That was kind of the immediate game plan that came to my mind for how to attack their defense.
Yeah. I think, again, like him on the short roll, hitting him in those pockets. And like the Houston makes those initial pocket passes tough, as we were sort of just discussing. And then like they make it tough with their like length and connectivity on the backside. But then, yeah, it does also turn into one of those situations where it's like, okay, Flip has the ball in space with some advantage, theoretically. So then my mind, at least for me, like next stepping it is like, where's Jaron McCain? Like, where is he to kick out to? And then the next thought is like, where's Mark Mitchell?
Yeah.
I'm going to be fascinated to see how Houston treats him in these situations. And I'm going to be fascinated to see like what Mark, how he counters it. Because like, this could be a big game for him too. Like he's kind of built, he like, Mark has like the like game of like a Houston front court guy, you know, like he really does. Like he's very tough, you know, versatile team defender, interior finisher. But just like, can he and Filipowski hook up for a couple of cuts? It's like, you don't even need to, it's one of those things where it's like, you don't need to be able to like hit this stuff every time down the court. You know, it's like, can you just hit it enough times to keep the gears moving? Mm-hmm. And to like keep their defense from having a B+ game, not it's like an A or an A+ game or whatever. Cause like that, the margins are like close enough, you know, or like that could be enough to swing it. It's just like, does Jared, can he shake loose for 5 catch and shoot threes? And does he make 3 of them instead of 1? You know, can Mark get 3 cut finishes instead of, you know, can he get 4 cut finishes instead of 2 or 1?
Right. So I'm curious if we do have some success from, you know, behind the 3-point, like when they played BYU and BYU started lighting them up, they stopped blitzing, you know, so, you know, then we have to counteract that. Right. So
same thing versus A&M too, actually. I watched some footage of that game and A&M was handling the blitz pretty well early and they moved away from it. So I'd kind of like to, I don't know if you have any thoughts on like how they were able to do that.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to sink in and watch a little bit more of that game. Honestly, I've been in like pretty heavy like Marquette preparation mode ahead of the state game this week, so I've been watching a lot of Marquette. So I can't speak specifically to the A&M game, and I don't want to just limp in with just some sort of like generic thoughts there. I've seen some other games this season where they had to like switch more though, and like because we started talking about how similar in size all of their guys are. And like that to me reeks of a team that's like built to switch because they're similar in size. They're all strong. They're all like very physical defenders and they create havoc too. And like being able to switch, you're still able to, you keep the ball in front and you still got the game breakers that can create events, you know, all throughout. I think if Duke could get them into a switch, I think that's a little interesting. Like, all of a sudden, you know, can Jeremy Roach get going in the pick and roll against the switch? Can Flip get to the post? I think Filipowski post-ups in this game are, like, big in general. Because I do think if you're getting gummed up in the pick and roll, you got to think of, like, other sources for offense.
And spam, like, that Flip, left block.
Yeah, right. Those cross screens to Flip on the block, or they just punch it into him, or they, you know, they slice him to the post. Like, all of their little actions that they've got to get him down there. And then what's the coverage? You know, this Houston, they send two. You know, they obviously, they like to trap pick and roll a lot. But there were some games this season. I watched them play against Baylor. I guess that was like a couple of weeks ago. But like, then, you know, Eves Missy for Baylor got some one-on-one post-up looks. And like, so I'll be curious to see like what the base is guarding Filipowski post-ups. Because you know there's going to be at least a handful of those, right? And if they do put two on the ball, what does that look like? You know, and can Flip sort of like step up and make some passes? Again, it just, for me, that boils down to where's Jared McCain and where's Mark Mitchell in the, or Sean Stewart potentially in those situations. So I think that's interesting from like just an offensive initiation standpoint. Obviously Duke does so much five out. That's where I'll be kind of curious to see like what some of those traps that Houston runs will look like when it's like the play is not just like, oh, Tyrese Proctor brings the ball up across half court and Kyle Filipowski runs up to set a ball screen. Like, there's also going to be, they start the ball with, they start the possession with like Kyle Filipowski in the middle of the floor with a guard and wing on one side and a guard and wing on the other side. You're going to get those like the five out zoom actions where it's a pin down for a player coming out of the corner into a dribble handoff. Can that be, can they make that harder to trap? If they're going to put two on the ball, can you get the guy I said the pin down shaking up for a catch and shoot three? We're probably, you know, pretty deep into this pod. We haven't even talked about Caleb Foster yet. I mean, Duke's been playing without Foster for a few, you know, for a little while now. But man, having another 6'4" guard that can, you know, shoot 40% on threes and pass and run some pick and roll and is like pretty good as a driver. He hasn't shot it great at the rim this season, but I think as a driver, his drives have been important for them. He's willing to do it. It would be nice to have one other. It'd be nice to have. I'm sure y'all have talked about it a fair amount on your pod, but like, it does feel like that has not been talked about all that much. Like, he's a really important player. He's just like lower in the order, you know, compared to Proctor and McCain and Roach. But man,
he started 15 games for us, right? He
initiates a lot of their offense. Like, it allows them to get Proctor off the ball a little bit more too. Like, there's some, you know, he's missed, obviously. He's a good player. But I'll be curious to see what those five out looks look like. And then I will also be curious to see like what their screens look like in terms of how often is like when Filipowski comes up to set a screen, how often is he like actually setting the screen and like hitting the on-ball defender versus ghosting those screens, blurring those screens, getting into veer action. They run, you know, veer action to get McCain, you know, pin down looks where, you know, Filipowski or Mitchell come up and they fake a ball screen and then they veer out to the corner and they set a pin down. Duke has another after timeout play. They tried it. I think they tried it against James Madison, where like they usually do it with Mitchell or Stewart, but like the one of those guys will run up, look like they're gonna set a ball screen, they'll veer out, and then they'll run them off of a back screen at the elbow to try to get a lob. They've run it for Stewart a couple of times this year. They've only hit it maybe once. And that's sort of more like after timeout package stuff too. But I'll be curious to see like in those situations, you're allowed to like pay attention to what a team runs after a timeout, just because like that they're setting up what they want to set up in those situations, you know? So I'll be curious to see like some of the specialty stuff, what that looks like too, along with just sort of like these, like what do the post-ups look like for Filipowski? What does the high post initiation look like? These five out looks, and what do the pick and rolls look like for Roach and for Proctor?
Yeah, speaking of Proctor, he was able to score a lot versus James Madison on those out-of-bounds plays. I would expect Houston will have scouted those a little bit better. I'm just kind of wondering what Proctor's offensive role would be in this game in general, because we've seen him kind of struggle a little bit against the bigger, more physical teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He's so good on those, the baseline out-of-bounds, those dribble handoff, like not even a dribble handoff, just the quick handoff back. Yeah,
and then get it back in the corner.
Pass and chase. He was good at that. Like last season, he had a couple of threes. There was the weight game. He had a couple in Cameron off that same little action. Obviously, like Filipowski is like a great partner to do those quick handoffs with. And like Duke has always looked for all. I mean, at this point, everyone does. But Duke's got a couple like really good quick hitters to get to. They do the one little like screen to screener play for McCain, or Roach gets that look sometimes coming off the little like curl into the corner. Yeah. That's like a class. I mean, everyone runs that play, but Duke runs it a lot. Yeah, Proctor, this is a big game for him, man, because like he's had a nice season. But as we talked about the last time I was on with y'all, like I think the perception has been that he's been a little down this season, even if he's been sort of like pretty similar to last year. But yeah, this would be a hell of a time for him to like get into his you know, he really, I think what it comes down to is like, can he hit jumpers though? Because like, I don't expect him to like turn the corner, you know, that like, like this is like not the team. Like they're not built, like they're not built to allow you to, they're not going to give it to you. And, but the thing that I think is interesting for Proctor is twofold, is one, like I said, the pull up jumpers. And then look, Tyrese, while he is limited in terms of like burst and speed, being able to like get north south, turn the corner, he can be pretty manipulative as a passer, and he's got good height, so he can scan and see over things. What do the skip passes look like for him? Can he hit a couple of those? You know, if it's McCain or Roach, two great shooters spotted up, like if they're going to put two on the ball and then zone up backside, can you hit one or two passes? Can you do it on a rope, so that you're putting it right in the shooting pocket for a guy like McCain, or for Roach, or Mitchell, I guess, too. I think, or Power, if he, I mean, I don't think this is going to be a TJ Power game. But
I will say, if you can get that, I noticed in one of those videos they talked about, they do the flyby, right? Like they're not coming to just, you know, stay on their feet. They're coming to jump at you. So, get your shot off, or one step, side step. Yeah.
And McCain's great.
McCain can hit that. Roach is too.
Roach is good at that. Yeah.
Or the shot fake step in, you know, and get to your. Not that they run you off the line, but like they do give up a fair amount of threes. Like those looks are going to be there. Just like making sure that they're like, you optimize them, right? So that it's a catch and shoot shot. It's early enough in the shot clock that if they are going to try to like sprint at you and run you off the line, then you can, shot fake sidestep, right? And like reload and go up. As opposed to like you're catching the ball at your knees. There's 4 seconds on the shot clock, and there's a guy flying at you.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more. I mean, McCain will get that off probably because he's just like that kind of a special shooter.
But Proctor likes to shoot it, man. He does, right? Like
he does.
You've seen some games where he's got. I mean, he had 10 against JMU from three, right? Like he has some like heavy attempt game. So
yeah, I like it. I actually like when he's like aggressive as a shooter from three, and I think in part because it means like he started with the ball. Like for me, Proctor was his best last season when like he'd kickstart the offense, get off the ball, and then like relocate, and then he'd catch it second side, and then it was a catch and shoot, or it was a, you know, a little like swing pick and roll or something like that. The defense is already like mixed up and scrambled a little bit. Then he gets to hit the ball screen. And so the 3-point volume for me, I like, because it means like one, he's being aggressive, and two, it means like he's probably getting some catch and shoot looks, which like means like it can mean a lot of things, but it could also indicate that like Duke's half court offense is like, you know, clicking a little bit and getting him into catch and shoot spots. The other thing that I'm circling for them, this goes back to Flip and all of the guards that are going to be running pick and roll, which is Roach, Proctor, McCain. Duke has been the last two seasons. When I close my eyes and like think about like Jeremy Roach at Duke, I will think of these sets. But Filipowski does this stuff with McCain. He does it with Proctor too. When they get to that empty corner, two-man action, they pick each unit. It's off in the left side of the floor, and they let Flip, you know, he catches the ball. He throws it to them on the wing. He chases. He sets a ball screen. He pops or he rolls or he short rolls, depending on the coverage. If you have that side, if you have that corner emptied, there's no natural help defender there, right? So, like, when Filipowski pops, he's really going into – and I'm sure Houston's still going to try to, like, run guys at him. They're not going to just, like, let him pop into space all game. But it does make it harder. There's, like, more – there's maybe a little bit more ground to cover when you're doing that. So, like, I just think those empty corner sets, like, that can be a soft – that can be a pressure point on Houston's defense. And it is something that, like, is baked into Duke's offense. Like, it is the When things are going sideways for them, like, John Shire is going to, like, point to Jeremy Roach and be like, and Flip, and be like, you, that side. And, like, yeah, 1-5 on, you know, the left side of the court. Like, it's, again, it's like, it to me is like the archetypal play for them the last two seasons. And so just, like, what can they squeeze out of that? Like, is that humming? Because if so, it opens up a lot of other stuff for them offensively, if that empty corner stuff is, like, really flowing for them.
Sure. Sure. Well, we've run a little bit long here, so I'm going to just kind of sneak us a quick little ad break in, folks, and then we'll be right back.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Brian, you've mentioned a lot about some certain stuff. I'm curious here, and this is maybe more of just the last 30 plus years of me watching K. Do you see where maybe we reach way back in the bag and try to bring out some of these horn sets and use some DHOs to get into some stuff versus like trying to mitigate? I'm trying to just think like, what can we do to maybe mitigate the blitz if it's really, because those like Tyrese trying to throw over the tops. Now, I know he's got a little bit of size, but historically, that's just not been a good move for us. Those huge kind of looping passes. You think John goes and breaks the horns out or gets into DHO stuff? Or
I could see some of the horns actions. I mean, like, there was one of the last games of this, was the Cameron game, the final Cameron game before UNC. So maybe it was Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah, that's where we were at, yeah.
Regardless, there was one game down the stretch where they went to a couple of times, like they went horns and they threw it to Mitchell at the elbow. And then they had Flip, I think it was Flip, like go and set like a ball screen or like slip, which like Duke's been running 4 or 5 pick and roll out of horns for a long time. I mean, it was something that's what they did with Paolo Banchero,
yeah,
Mark Mitchell a lot. It's what they did with Matthew Hurt and Jalen Johnson, Zion and Bolden or Delorier. Like you can go back, like it's been a part of the playbook for a while now. Brandon Ingram and Marshall Plumlee, like it's been a piece. And I'd be curious to see, like, look, maybe Houston just switches those matchups, right? Like a lot of teams like to do that if they can and just like stay out of rotation. But if you're trying to like avoid, if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to avoid the hedge, but or the blitz and still get into some ball screen stuff, maybe that's part of it. You know, or you can even flip it and you throw it to Flip at the elbow and you've got a 4-5 pick and roll or a 5-4 pick and roll with Mitchell screening for him. Like they've done some inverted stuff this year with Filipowski where like he's caught the ball and they've used Roach to set a screen for him. So maybe that's something you do. And all of a sudden, like the person trying to hedge the screen or to blitz the screen is a guard, right? It's
against a 7-footer, right?
Yeah. It's Pryor or Shed. And it's not, you know, it's not Roberts or it's not Francis. Like it's one of the smaller guys. So like maybe that's some way you can sort of like bend the defense and compromise it a little bit. Some of these like inverted looks. So I do think there's in like horns is a way for them to get into that too. You know,
it's scary looking at their defense, right? I think the scariest part is like we know how I think everyone knows at this point, like they're going to blitz you hard on the pick and roll. Yeah. They're going to deny the ball screen. But to me, the most impressive part is their block rate despite doing this, yeah, right? Like they're able to do it, manipulate you, know where you're going to go. And even if you feel like you're open, they're still blocking a ton of shots. Despite
not having any 7-footers either.
No true tallest guys like 6'9", I think. Yeah. That's the scariest part because we have a propensity at times to get a little stuffed up down there. Yeah. So
Mark Mitchell versus JMU, I think, was blocked 5 times.
Yeah.
Six attempts.
I think the backboard got him twice.
Yeah. Blocked by the equipment, as rejected by the equipment, as Steve Martin would say, the old Hornets broadcaster. But yeah, and like, I mean, Houston's also with that. I mean, they're missing. I mean, it's incredible how well they're playing despite no Terrence Arsenault, who's been out for a while now, and no, you know, Joseph Tugler, who's their like freshman, like dynamo forward, who like looks like the next great Houston defender, you know? Yeah. He looks awesome.
Wingspan is like 7'2" or something absurd, something crazy.
And he's been out since early March. It's a bummer that he's not playing anymore. But I think one of the other ways, and we sort of touched on this a little bit earlier too, but one of the other ways to just like avoid the hedge and stuff like that, or the blitz, I keep calling hedge, but like I just think like also movement sets with McCain. And like that's been, that's another thing that's been such like a huge part of Duke's offense. But one of the things they ran a couple of times against JMU was they went horns. They threw it to like the right, you know, they threw it to the elbow. McCain would be stationed in the opposite corner. And then they would have the opposite guy at the elbow go and set a little pin down for him coming off that. You know, all of the flare screen action they've run with Mitchell screening for McCain this year. Like, can you eat off that at all? Can McCain get going? Can you force Houston to like adjust? And can you get that, like, if you can get that one victory in the game within the game, can then you know, get them out of their base? Can you get them doing other stuff? So I just go to like the movement sets. They've been cooking up new stuff for McCain, but there's some stuff that's been in the playbook for a while now, going back to November, December. And then, like I sort of talked about, like the ghost actions, the veer actions. One of the things that Duke did a couple of times early in the season, I can think about it from the Arizona game, the Dartmouth game to start the year. And I thought it was going to be like a bigger part of their playbook, but it's been when they get to split action off the ball, where they throw it to Filipowski at the elbow or in the high post, and then they have McCain. And Proctor would be the other guy to do this with because he's such a dynamic movement shooter too. But you have those guys like run like they're going to like hit each other and then they split off in different ways too.
Is that a Golden State thing?
Yeah, I mean, like that is who is like within the last decade, that's who's like popularized it, right? Like all Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, the split action. But like a lot, you know, a lot of people use it now. It's an older school thing that like Steve Kerr is like has sort of like modernized. Steve Kerr and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Right. I mean,
like
sure,
having right. like the right guys, you know, and having like a front court initiator like Draymond. Who, by the way, I saw Draymond got tossed. They were playing
within
the
4 minutes of the game. So
it was on a hell of a basket by Ben Caro too, who's playing amazing right now. But yeah, like that would be something too. Like I'd be trying to find other ways. I'd be thinking of movement opportunities for McCain, and then like any sort of like fake screening action, dummy screening action that's going to turn into, like I said, a ghost screen, veer action, or split cuts. And so I'm trying to see if you can beat them that way. And I think I touched on this a little bit earlier, but just like when Filipowski catches the ball in those pockets of space and Houston's defense is like rotating to recover and those windows, they're shrinking immediately. Like as soon as you catch it, like guys got to be able to like, guys have to move too. Like it can't just be like flip, catch the ball in the pocket and then like scan the floor. Because by the
spin
time
move,
you do that,
yeah, no.
It's got to be a quick
that,
process,
like,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, and he's got the ability to do it, but just like guys relocating around the perimeter, cutting down low, like, you know, Mitchell going dunker to dunker or going elbow to dunker. And also, like, might not be a bad idea to have some of the guards give you some vertical cuts, too. You know, McCain sprinting from the wing, you know, into the paint when Flip catches it, and they're the help side is trying to, like, rotate around behind the play. I just think your secondary movement has to be like really good against them too.
Do you think we can speed them up at all? Do you think there's acceptable or that Duke's capable of, like, typically like when we played UVA a lot, like we're not a team that plays really fast, but it seems like when we play them, it's very intentional of like, hey, we're pushing off makes, we're pushing off misses. Like mm-hmm. we're really trying to get up the floor quickly. Do you think Duke can do anything like that? Or is this defense just too disciplined in transition to where you're probably not getting that?
I think you should try. Because
they're like, crashing the glass, right? So if they're,
yeah,
right. they're going to sell out on the offensive glass, something's got
to
get.
Guys, and you got to remember, like Duke, anyone on Duke's starting lineup can push the ball. And with a guy like Proctor, you've got an awesome hit-ahead passer. Actually, like, I mean, I'm like, this will be like the one of the things I like die on with Proctor, but like, I think the best parts of his game are the connective passing. It's the transition. And like, I think he's really at his best in transition, like making the extra pass or the hit ahead, the little like give and go back and forth for a McCain three that they had against James Madison was so sick. Like it was one of my favorite plays of the tournament so far. And Proctor's just got such a good feel for like redirecting it, and like keeping the advantage up. So I would hope that would be the case, that if you can get them in some odd number situations where, especially if like Flip is switched out or Mitchell is switched out, right? And then like, you know, Mark Mitchell is switched out onto one of the guards, a shot goes up, Houston sends numbers, you know, Filipowski rebound, hit to Proctor hit ahead to Mitchell, who's got, you know, because he switched out on a guard, he's cross-matched in transition, and then maybe you can steal some points that way. Like, obviously, anything you can get on the break against Houston to, like, keep them out of just, like, sinking their teeth into you in the half court is huge. But, like, I think it's got to be more of, like, an opportunistic thing as opposed to, like, this is something that, like, Duke is, like, committed to doing, you know, X number of possessions in the game. Because, like, one, it's hard to do against them. And also, two, like, I don't know if Duke has like the horses for it either. Like
without Caleb, we're pretty thin.
It's a pretty thin rotation, man. And like Houston's going to drain you too, just because like they're so physical and athletic and talented. And yeah, it's like, it's just, but Duke also hasn't played. I mean, it's going to be like 6 days or whatever in between games. So it's like, they should
let it all out,
you know? Yeah, exactly.
Let
so
it go.
But again, I think that to me, I think that's like more opportunistic than it is like something you can like really bank on against them.
Sure, sure. Last thing before we get out of here, I know you got some other stuff going on here too. We mentioned the foul rate here. Is this like, if you're scouting it and if you're coming in as Duke, are you just looking at this like, hey, we're a good 3-point shooting team, maybe they're going to give us some, let's just try to bomb it and like play the numbers game and get 28, 29, 30 of these bad boys up? Or are you trying to more focus on, let's take advantage of their aggressiveness, spread the five out, but try to drive the ball and get to the free throw line. Like, is there a better, worse here?
My hope would be that the drives open up the threes too. Like, not to like split it, but it's like, because the threes I want against Houston are not like, you know, pull-ups, you know, with you know, Shed sinking his teeth into you. It's you space the floor, you create some advantage, you drive, you create a rotation, and then you spray out to, like, I mean, like, that is one of the things. Like, the Duke's three guards are all, like, very good shooters. McCain is obviously, like, just a ridiculous shooter. The guy's so special. So that is something to keep an eye on. I think, like, I do think Duke being committed to getting threes up is, like, pretty important. I do think that's a big deal. But, like, like all of these things, it's like context is important, right? It can't just be like, this can't just be like, oh, we need to get 30 threes up. Well, let's do that any way we can. It's like,
right.
It's gotta be like either slash and kick, or like you bend the defense in the pick and roll, Filipowski short roll, he sprays out to Roach, or it's, you know, empty side, you know, pick and pop with Filipowski, and you know, Houston doesn't rotate or stunt or whatever, and all of a sudden he gets a pick and pop three. That's like, you know, with a relatively clean looking shot. So like, I do think it's a big deal for them to like, I think they've got to like up the 3-point volume, and they've got the guys to do it. And like, Duke has a pretty clever coaching staff and analytics department, you know, guiding this team too. And so I'll be curious to see like kind of like what conclusions they come to sort of like attack at this. But I think sort of like because Houston is capable of giving up threes. So it's just like, what do those threes look like? But yeah, I would be trying to get those up. Like, yeah. I really would. Even the Filipowski post-ups, it's like, yeah, if he gets single coverage, let him go to work and try to score and draw fouls. But if help's coming, I'm trying to think of how I can, like, swing this ball around so it finds.
Yeah, because they're not super deep either. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see how the game's officiated, how the game's going to be called.
Yep.
That will make a factor here as well. Obviously, it's down in Dallas, so I expect a pretty big Houston turnout down there. A lot of faithful going to be in the building. Brian, I know you got to go here. We're going to get out of here, but real quick, just for Shu and Raul, I won't make you do this one. Brian, Ken Palm's got this. It's 69-66 Houston. Where are you going?
Shu, you can go first.
Oh, you're making me do this? I thought you said you're only making Brian.
I'll leave him out of it more.
I thought you were only making him do it. I thought that's the way that was worded. Are you sure? My computer's about to go out. I'm actually about to lose signal.
1%?
Yeah, 1% here. I'm really not giving you guys. You guys can keep playing. I'm not giving you a number. I'm not doing any of that.
You're not doing the score?
I'm not putting it out there. No.
Not putting it out. Okay. All right. Someone got some.
You know that I'm not super, super optimistic about this one. I don't think it'll be a blowout just based on the way that Duke has been playing, but I do think we're maybe a little bit physically outmatched. So, yeah, I don't have a particular score prediction, but give me Houston by 7.
Okay. I will say, too, if it plays out like Ken Palm's suggesting it's going to play out, like in that like mid to high 60s, I'm not super crazy about that. If we're able to get 75-ish, if we're able to get in that realm, I'd feel a lot better about it. But
well, that probably means we broke their defense in some way.
At least a little bit. Yeah. And we ain't got to get 95 like A&M did. But yeah. I do think we're going to have to put some pressure with our offense.
One thing we didn't talk about is just like the X factor of Jeremy Roach going 2022 Texas Tech Jeremy Roach and just eviscerating the best defense in the country.
Yep. And just pulling up and just splashing that
midi. He could do it. Like, it would be incredible if they just get like a classic Roach, you know, all-time performance. To your point about their depth, like looking at their lineup data, the lineup of their starters, you know, Shed, Cryer, Sharp, Roberts, and Francis, that lineup has played 305 minutes this season. According to CBB Analytics, they're plus 156.
Jeez.
With a net rating of plus 33.5 points per 100 possessions. The defense allowing under 83 points for 100 possessions when they line up on the court. It's crazy. But their next most played lineup is that same crew, but with Tugler and over Francis, and he's out, obviously. So, like, this really is going to be, like, I mean, to your point a second ago about the foul issues, it's sort of like, it feels like both teams are going to have to navigate this. So, like, you could, like, this could end up being, like, a postseason baseball thing, too, where it's, like, what unexpected person comes off the bench, you know what I mean, and hits two shots. It might be, you know, that might be, like, enough to swing it. Because Houston's next most played lineup is, you know, you're looking at 65 minutes with Shedd, Cryer, Dunn, Roberts, and Francis. So, like, you know, they've got some guys that Kelvin Sampson trusts off the bench. But, man, it is incredible to see, like, what he's built down there. Like, this is a bona fide big-time program. And
they've been knocking on the door for a while. And they have the dudes that are – it's going to be tough.
They must have like heat culture almost there. It's like they're playing like five, six guys, but they're playing that hard. And they won all three of their overtime games.
They're all so bought in, dude. Philosophically, when you watch it, like you have to be so connected to be able to do what they're doing defensively. Yep. It's truly impressive.
It is. Yep.
And they had the first T-ball American. Last year it was Sasser. This year,
now it's she. I mean, that's, you know, if you want to kind of pan out, and we'll give an optimistic take, just to leave it here, they really haven't played an offense quite like Duke's yet, though. Now they played Baylor, who's got a great offense.
That's the closest for sure.
Duke's got a better defense than Baylor does. I don't think that part's quite negotiable right now. I mean,
yeah, I was going through it. The other best offense they played was BYU, and most of the others are like 25.
That does things differently than what we do. So it's, you know, if you want to say, hey, maybe we threaten them in a way that they haven't really seen yet, now whether or not that matters, we'll find out about Friday.
How they play against that the initial blitz. Like if you see Proctor, like he did against Miami and State last year when they came at him hard and just kind of crumbled down and folded, like it's not going to be a pretty game for long.
You have to circle him. We talked about him at the top, but yeah, he's like a huge swing piece in this. I mean, it's like these are not the same kind of caliber of offenses of Duke, but they are good. But like, you know, Dayton with Daron Holmes, Texas with Dylan Dessou, like these are some of like the stretch front court guys that they've played, but like those guys don't pass the ball like Filipowski, right? They don't handle in space and get downhill with that level of like of physicality. And like, I mean, yeah, we've been saying it all year. Like he's the guy is a crazy weapon and matchup beater. So he obviously is circled as someone who's like necessary to have a monster two-way game where he also plays a ton. Like, I mean, they need minutes out of him and they need production.
Yeah. Obviously it would be nice to get another cheat code McCain game where he just hits his first six threes and goes deep for 11. That would be phenomenal.
That is the thing with McCain, and especially in all these like one game samples, it's like, you don't know, you might get that. Like you just get past Jared, you know, and all of a sudden he's, you know, he catches fire. Like he's good no matter what, but like, obviously he's got that one level as a shooter where he can just take your scheme and throw it over the top rope. By just catching fire off a catch and in transition and, you know, little sidestep threes and pick and roll. Like, yeah, I mean.
And they cluster. Like when he does it, it's cluster boom, buckets, boom, boom, right? Yeah. It's like, it's quick 15. It's a quick 17. And it's like, ooh.
They also have like, they really do have like a gear when like, when he's hot and like Proctor is also like doing it. It's all of a sudden you can see the like, what the vision was this season with like those two kinds of guys. Plus like Roach as like a, you know, a pick and roll guy who can also spot up too. But just Proctor's like, you know, his like ability to shoot off the move and like the quick trigger nature of it. Like when he and McCain are both firing, and that was what the JMU game felt like. It was like, whoa, like this, there probably have been other games like that this season, but like that one is definitely like the first one that comes to mind, you know, recency bias, obviously, but they just look way different when those guys are rolling like that.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Virginia Tech, that was one that comes to mind where we won up there by like 15. Virginia, yeah. I think there was a Pittsburgh game that was a blowout too.
Definitely the Virginia game. Yeah, definitely the Virginia. That was, that had to be Duke's best game of the, that wasn't even like a great McCain game, but Proctor was really good in it.
We just blitzed them up. Yeah, we just completely just ran them. That was a fun game to be at. But yeah, Brian, I know you got to get out of here, so we'll wrap this up here. Anything that you got going on that you want to plug? I know you said you're covering a lot of the state Marquette stuff right now. Hornets are obviously doing Hornet things.
Hornet things. Saw Brandon Miller was having a good game tonight, but obviously they've been bad. And like, I'm getting to their games at really weird times right now, which like just my own like. And simply tournament stuff is taking priority. You know?
Right.
And obviously having like the triangle schools go and the ACC do well in this has been very fun. It's also added more work. So
yep.
I'm trying to do like a Marquette preview piece for 247 Sports, like looking at the state Marquette matchup. But like, I'm not gonna lie, I spent a lot of time watching film and I've spent very little time writing. I'm running out of time, so we'll see. But I'm also going to be hopping on the Chucking Darts NBA Draft podcast. I'm actually going to be recording that a little later tonight, sort of looking at some of the top prospects that are like left in the tournament. So if you follow me on Twitter at BGEIS_bird, BGEIS_bird, like all the links will be up there. And Chucking Darts is a great podcast that's like honing in on like draft coverage with like pretty good, like hardcore, like you guys would. There's a lot of like X and O talk on there too. Like it would be up if you're into this year, it would be up your alley too. And there's going to be, I'm sure, like looking an evaluation of guys like Flip, McCain, but looking at them sort of like from a draft perspective, as well as sort of like, you know, matchups heading into the weekend.
Nice, for sure. Well, we'll kind of get out of here, folks. So, you know, in the meantime, as we're all waiting anxiously for Friday to get here, rate, review, subscribe. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter @devilsdenpod247. Keep the faces strong and the verve high. Go Duke.